You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another great edition of the Eagle Sports Zone. As per usual, I am your host, Henday. I will be with you until 8 p.m. this evening. So, today on the Eagle Sports Zone, we're going to be talking youth football. You know, and the importance of youth football, the importance of youth developmental tournaments. And the reason for this is because over the weekend I got to witness, you know, another edition of the SKW tournament, the annual SKW tournament, one of the staples on the youth football, on the Namibian youth football developmental calendars. So we will use that as a backdrop for our conversation today. But before we do all that, as per usual, make sure you're following us on all of our social media pages. That's Eagle FM Namibia on Instagram, on X, on Facebook, on LinkedIn, on WhatsApp. If you don't have the link to our WhatsApp channel yet, simply send us a message at 081-241-44. Make sure that it is a WhatsApp message and that you save the number, because that is also the number that will give you access to the Villager newspaper every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Seeing that tomorrow is Monday, another great edition will be published bright and early for you directly to your mobile device if you have told us that you would like to become a subscriber. Now, with that said, make sure you also visit the Eagle FM website. That's www.eaglefm.com.na, as well as download the Eagle FM mobile application, free to download on the Google Play Store as well as the App Store if you are an Apple user. And the reason I'm bringing these up is if you, for whatever reason, missed a broadcast of your favorite program, whether it was last week's Eagle Sports Zone, episode from last month, episode from last year, any program that you enjoy on Eagle FM, and you missed the live taping, you can access everything that is in our podcast library on the Eagle FM website as well as the Eagle FM mobile application. That'll allow you to listen to us from wherever you are in the world, whether it's live or it's a podcast you want to listen to at your own pace. So, to those of you that are tuned into us from outside of Namibia, welcome, welcome to another great edition of the Eagle Sports Zone. And on the other side of this, we'll get into our first piece of content, really, that we were going to discuss today. And yeah, stay along for the ride. We will be right back.
Tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. Now, in our first piece of news, first piece of the content that we're going to discuss today is some history was made today in London, made by a Kenyan by the name, a 29-year-old Kenyan by the name Sebastian Sawe, who made history by becoming the first person to run a sub-2-hour marathon after winning the 2026 London Marathon in 1 hour 59 minutes and 30 seconds. He broke the existing world record by 65 seconds. And Sebastian also won the 2025 World Cup. But interestingly enough, what happened in this marathon race is the person that finished, actually all three people, right, would have broken the previous world record, but the person that finished second also ran a sub-2-hour marathon, but of course he finished behind Sebastian, and that was Ethiopian Yomiv Kejelcha. Excuse me, Ethiopian Yomiv Kejelcha. He finished second, also achieving the sub-2-hour feat by finishing in 1 hour 59 minutes and 41 seconds. So several levels of history being made at this year's London Marathon. And something rather interesting that took place. Those of you that, if you do follow marathon running, long distance events, you remember the campaign that Nike had with the Kenyan, Mr. Kipchoge. Eliud Kipchoge, right? Nike spent a lot of money on this campaign to basically try to get Kipchoge to run a sub-2-hour marathon. And he did it in 2019, but it wasn't in official racing conditions. He basically, you know, they had him running in the equivalent of what was a vacuum. That's why it's only being recognized today in quote-unquote official conditions that the sub-2-hour mark has been broken. And again, the two gentlemen that broke that finished the marathon in the sub-2-hour time, they did it wearing Adidas shoes, actually. So now that's where things get interesting in the world of branding, in the world of deal endorsements and things of that nature. Because like I said, Nike spent a lot of money on that whole Kipchoge thing. And it was a good campaign. I mean, we're still talking about it today. So maybe it was money well spent. But when the record actually got officially broken, it was done by a runner in Adidas shoes. And speaking of Adidas, something that Adidas did for Sebastian is, because there's been previous, world records when it comes to the marathon, a few Kenyan runners and whatnot have actually come out tested positive when it came to doping tests. So their records were obviously illegitimate. So what Adidas did, they said, we're going to spend over $50,000 to test this guy consistently to make sure that every time he runs, basically, that he is a clean athlete. And for those that don't know, to drug test, it costs a lot of money. It's not a cheap thing to do. That's why here, even in Namibian local, sporting events, it's only a select group of people that get drug tested. I've actually only seen it in the flesh myself during a cycling event. And obviously, I believe it was only the winner that got tested, because it costs a lot of money. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but it costs a lot of money. Like I said, Nike spent $50,000 to test him. throughout, I believe it was a period of 12 months. Correction. He was actually drug tested 25 times, both blood and urine tests, in the space of 2 months in the lead up to last year's Berlin Marathon. So, you know, Adidas were justified in their spending because they now have a world record holding athlete whose record I don't believe will be broken anytime soon. As we know, a sub, for those that don't know, a sub 2 hour marathon is seen as like almost one of those impossible feats because of what it requires from the human body, is why no one up to now has done this. You know, you're basically asking someone to run for essentially 21 kilometers per hour for 2 hours. That's the pace that these guys run at when they run in marathons. So just picture yourself running at 21 kilometers per hour, basically the maximum speed of most treadmills. If you put your treadmill on maximum, attempt to run that for 2 hours. That's what Sebastian did this afternoon. And once again, showing the world how strong African runners really, how strong African runners really are. Now, let's get to some score lines from around the footballing world. The English Premier League, of course, took place over the weekend with serious title implications at play. Not everyone played because there is FA Cup also, so let's actually do the FA Cup first. Chelsea beat Leeds 1-0. That was today. They beat Leeds in the FA Cup semi-final. The other semi-final consisted of Manchester City and Southampton. Manchester City took the 1-2, 2-1, so it will be a Blues final with Manchester City going up against Chelsea in the FA Cup final. And in the English Premier League, as we know, the hot title race between Arsenal and Manchester City. Arsenal beat Newcastle United 1-0 yesterday. That puts them back at the top of the table. Obviously, Manchester City did not play because of the FA Cup fixture. But as things stand, Arsenal are on 73 points with Manchester City in second on 70 points, followed by Man United, who play tomorrow evening against Brentford, looking to further cement their top four finish. In other results, you had Liverpool beating Crystal Palace 3-1. Tottenham finally got a crucial win against Wolves, beating them 1-0. And Nottingham Forest also pretty much secured their place in next year's Premier League season by beating Sunderland, newly promoted Sunderland, by the way, 5-0. Over in La Liga, we had Barcelona play against Getafe. 2-0. Barcelona took that one. That puts them, I mean, the title race over there is pretty much over, but that puts them 11 points ahead of Real Madrid, who are in second place on 74 points. And Real Madrid, again, dropped more points by drawing 1-1 to Real Betis. And closer to home, over in the South African Premier League, Mamelodi Sundowns are playing against Richards Bay right now, 0-0. Peter Chalulia is back from injury. He's not starting, but he is on the bench for the Brazilians. And then you had the famous Soweto Derby took place today as well. That one ending in a 1-1 draw. So as things stand in the South African Premiership, Orlando Pirates leads the table on 59 points. And if Sundowns are to remain, if the Sundowns result is to remain a draw as it is standing right now, Mamelodi Sundowns will be in second place on 58 points. And in third is the Kaizer Chiefs. They really needed to win today, actually. Down third on 47 points. As the South African Premier League season comes to a close with just a few games remaining. So a tight, tight title race there. Sundowns still have a game in hand over Pirates. But ladies and gentlemen, we'll take another short musical break. And on the other side of this, we will get into some continental sports business news before we get into our talk of youth development football. If you'd like to chime in into the studio, the number is 083-288-401. That's 083-288-401. If you'd like to call in with any questions, comments, concerns, any ideas, you are welcome to come through. But we will be back right on the other side of this.
Praise God, I say. Praise God each day. He has me to overcome. I remember once I couldn't get out of bed, so I sing and say, hey, lying in bed, got nothing to do. No one to rub my head. Playing my guitar, my only friend. It's gonna last me till the end. Don't wanna lie in bed, wanna get out instead. I wanna feel free with activity. Nurse!
Hot dogs. I love hot dogs. I wonder why it's called a hot dog. I can eat them day or night. Let's squeeze some tomato sauce on this bad boy and enjoy. Ah, no! Now I've got tomato sauce on my dog, my watch, and my favorite shirt.
Sometimes you just squeeze too hard, and your favorite shirt gets ruined. But luckily, with Express Credit's easy payday loans, you can get up to 9,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. The number in the studio is 0832-888-401. That's 0832-888-401 if you'd like to join the conversation. So now let's head over to some continental sports business news. First, we're going to start with the 2026 FIFA World Cup. I think we can now safely say the infamous 2026 FIFA World Cup. Since we've been hearing a lot of bad news coming from there. But some good news, at least for us here on the continent, is the World Cup is set for full distribution across the continent via one of our favorite sporting channels here on the continent, that is Super Sport. So Super Sport, which is obviously part of the multi-choice group, and now a Canal Plus subsidiary, will broadcast all 104 games of the expanded FIFA World Cup across English and Portuguese-speaking Africa, making it one of the most extensive tournament distributions on the continent to date. So you'll be able to watch the World Cup, obviously, on DSTV, on GoTV, including some streaming services. And this will be a historic tournament for Africa because, as we know, there will be 10 African teams representing the continent for the very first time at the tournament. So I expect that to actually be driving the viewership numbers of this World Cup even higher and higher than what they normally are on the continent. And I couldn't find exactly how much Canal purchased the rights for, but I'm certain that it is an eye-watering figure. Mr. Randani Ramova, who is the director for content and sport over at Canal Plus, he said at a press conference, "We are thrilled to announce that our subscribers will get to witness yet another historic FIFA World Cup on SuperSport. With Africa sending its biggest ever contingent, we are proud to bring Africans the biggest global sports showpiece in the quality that they expect." And he also added that, "As this is the most anticipated FIFA World Cup from an African perspective since 2010, with that I agree. We are excited that more people will be able to watch via accessible packages while also delivering a broadcast that features tailored to local cultures and languages." And the only reason I'm discussing this is because we kind of expect this, you know, to be able to watch the World Cup on SuperSport, but earlier it was reported that Canal You know, we'll now be in charge of the broadcast rights that SuperSport purchases. And we saw that we didn't get to watch things like the Winter Olympics on SuperSport. They've cut down on a lot of things. So there was a possibility, though quite unlikely, that they would not air the World Cup, considering how lucrative that would be. But there was a possibility that we wouldn't be able to watch the World Cup on the platform that we are used to watching it to. So, good news in that sense. And then we move over to West Africa, where Ghana will now be partnering with Morocco on its sporting infrastructure. And the only reason I want to discuss this is because it would be interesting if we could do this in Namibia as well, with whether I don't even think we have to go as far as Morocco. I mean, our neighbor down south, South Africa, has figured sports infrastructure out as well. But the story is as follows, is that Ghana is moving to strengthen its sports infrastructure through a strategic collaboration with Morocco, as policymakers look to replicate one of Africa's most advanced facility development models. So Ghana is basically saying, look, Morocco, we can see you guys are doing it well. You guys are hosting all kinds of competitions. You're hosting the World Cup soon. You just hosted AFCON. Help us, is essentially what Ghana is saying. And their Foreign Affairs Minister, Samuel Ablakwa, confirmed the partnership during an engagement with a Moroccan delegation, positioning Morocco's recent investments as a benchmark for Ghana's next phase of sporting development. He said, we are also collaborating when it comes to sports, because you know that Morocco has become the hub for sports activities in Africa. And then he added that they have invested tremendously in sporting infrastructure, and we are working with them to also improve our facilities and to nurture our young talents. So our cooperation with Morocco is becoming very broad, very deep, and very wide. So this is very interesting. It would be perhaps on the other side of this, when we take a break, I can look up if this has happened anywhere else on the continent. But it is a good thing to see one African nation that has figured things out when it comes to sporting infrastructure, helping another African nation trying to figure things out when it comes to sporting infrastructure. You know, Namibia, we've heard a lot about some of our leaders, rather. You know, they've taken consultancy trips. They've taken, what's the phrase that they use? I forget the official term, but, you know, they say they take trips to all around the world to first class facilities. So it'll be interesting to hear if maybe the ministry can come back to us and tell us if they've done anything similar. I know on a federation level, I don't mean to keep talking about Cricket Namibia, but Cricket Namibia, they've taken similar visits to South Africa, where they went to learn, you know, how some of these stadiums operate from an operational standpoint. So I don't see why Namibia as a government or certain federations couldn't do the same, whether it's with South Africa, whether it's with Rwanda, whether it's with Morocco, whether it's with Tanzania, Kenya now also. The continent could help each other to help its people in turn. Now we move back to East Africa, back to the Kenyans, the never tiring Kenyans, it seems, where we had where both the men's and women's winners of the Boston Marathon, one of the most storied historic marathons on the marathon calendar, the Kenyan pair captured quite a significant piece of prize money. In the men's race, Kenya's John Korir earned $150,000. That converts into $150,000. is around $2.4 million. So imagine if we had a Namibian long distance runner that could win $2.4 million just for running. And then he also got a bonus for setting a new course record, not even a world record, just a course record of 2 hours, 1 minute and 52 seconds. He got a $50,000 bonus. So he actually walked away with $200,000, which is in the region of $3.2 million. In the women's race, Sharon Lokedi claimed $150,000 for her second consecutive Boston Marathon win. So, some Kenyans got rich in America recently via long distance running. So, congratulations to both Sharon and John. Now we move over to go back to North Africa, where an interesting endorsement deal took place. This was between Lime Consumer Finance has joined the sporting sector by announcing an exclusive sponsorship agreement with a paddle player, Egyptian paddle player, and her name is Yaya Youssef. So Lime, some background information on Lime. Is a company that was initially established by the Abu Dhabi Bank, first Abu Dhabi Bank, but it has built one of Egypt's biggest lending platforms for both long-term education financing. They offer various financial services, right? And through its digital marketplace, they connect families with educational institutions supported by their onboarding and data-driven tools designed to improve financial decision-making. And so what the company is saying is that by backing an emerging athlete in one of the fastest-growing sports in North Africa and the Middle East as well, which is paddle, which has been growing up at a pretty good pace here in Namibia as well. The brand is aligning itself with a new generation of consumers and aspirational talent. So just another example of a company leveraging sport to drive brand visibility, customer acquisition, as well as, you know, add to that cultural relevance of things happening. So it will be interesting. Oh, I actually wonder what paddle looks like on the national stage. I know our paddle industry is still very much in its infancy. We had a domestic paddle league take place, I believe that was 2 weeks ago. But when it comes to a national level, if we can have people represent Namibia in paddle, I believe the checks and balances with the Paddle Federation haven't taken place as of yet. But with that said, we're going to take a short musical break, and then we will get into our discussion of youth football and its importance to the footballing ecosystem. Don't forget, you can call into the studio at any time at 0832 888 401. That's 0832 888 401. We will be right back.
Ondaloro, okumamara, woman no nonsense. Anotaki, Satana, Zapoman,
Sake wa jo papi man. Sipanga sapo man. Yeah. Bye for just man. Badaro kuchi man.
Why pay more when you can pay less at USAFE stores? Enjoy nutritious and delicious meals for the whole family. 4 kilogram real good frozen mixed chicken portions for only $199.99. 5 kilos Rice King, $99.99. 500 grams Rama 70% fat free, $26.99. 700 milliliter Wellington's tomato sauce, just $26.99. USAFE, where good food costs less.
Tata puti no guanguana, omoye tacho fukara. Tati na kera mo pwete wajena no wajena mataka.
Toma wanye mupina anje, tato ni anje na mena anje. Mudi u anje piti na anje, ino eta anje.
Madot batenga baby,
not
a terrible market at 28. Satanas are for Hanako, what are
tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. And as promised before the commercial break, today we are discussing youth football. And this is on the sidelines, on the backdrop of the SKW Youth Football Tournament that took place this weekend. Now, this tournament, you know, I was present for a majority of this tournament. And I came to a realization where I realized that this tournament is actually one of, if not the longest running youth football tournament that exists in Namibia. You know, for context, this is a tournament that I played in for maybe, we could probably say 10 years that I played in. And I haven't played in this tournament in more than 10 years as well. So that gives you an indication of how long this tournament has been running. I tried my best to find how long this tournament has actually been going on. I tried to talk to people there. No one really knew the answer. But I'm willing to bet a decent amount of money. This tournament is probably 30 years old. Right? And it's run primarily by, run and financed by the club itself, by SKW itself. And this was my first time back in, like I said, over 10 years, maybe even 15 years. And it was surprising to see that the levels of enthusiasm haven't dropped. The levels of excitement haven't dropped, especially in the younger age groups. You're under 7s, you're under 9s, you're under 11s, those age groups. The excitement was still there. The kids were 100% excited to be there. The parents were excited to be there from early mornings to late evenings. It was good to see. And these are the tournaments that are crucial, absolutely crucial for Namibian youth football, for the overall development of Namibian footballers, but also just for the communal aspect that these tournaments come with. You know, there's a lot of socializing happening there. As a kid, you're playing against kids from, you know, out of town. I saw some teams from Sokopo there. As usual, SFC was there, and then another one, I forgot their name now. But it's a great socializing opportunity on a sporting level and on both just regular social level. Now, one thing that I did learn through this tournament that maybe I haven't been paying attention to, you know, youth football as much as perhaps I should have, but is the performance of AC or Julinho, whatever you want to call them. Across all age groups, it was very clear that this club is doing well. They're doing the right thing. All their teams play structured football. You can see it from the younger age groups already, from under 7, from under 8, under 9. You can see that they are at least attempting to carry out certain tactics that they were obviously coached throughout the last few months. You know, normally you would only see that with SKW itself. So it's good to see. And there was a few teams, not just those two teams, but there was a few teams playing quite excellent football, I must say. And there was also Windhoek City. I believe it was in the under 9 age group, perhaps. Maybe under 11. That essentially had a team of only girls. They became fan favorites. I believe they only made it, not only, but they made it to the quarterfinals, where they lost in a penalty shootout to SKW. But it was very encouraging to see this group of girls that was, when I say dominating, they were dominating the play. They didn't, you know, there wasn't a thing of, you could tell that they felt that they belonged, and truthfully speaking, they were better than some of their male counterparts, and they knew it as well. You know, the way they were playing, the confidence that they were playing with, it was very fun to see. It was very entertaining to see, and that was what we need more of in our footballing ecosystem. So with that said, I want us to now listen to a short excerpt from SABC News about a similar tournament that happens in South Africa. This is in KwaZulu-Natal. Just to get a bit of understanding of what it looks like on the other side of the border when it comes to this. Of course, we know South Africa has one of the better, you know, sports youth infrastructures in the world. They have things like the Disky Challenge, which we'll talk about after this video as well, and its success. But as a player, you get to the Disky Challenge through tournaments like this take in.
This holiday season, young talent from across the south coast of KwaZulu-Natal has come together for a two-day rural football tournament focused on development, discipline, and opportunity The action kicked off yesterday, and today it all wraps up in style with the finals and a prize-giving ceremony celebrating the champions. This is more than football. It's youth development, community upliftment, and hope in motion. Well, joining us to unpack this impactful grassroots initiative is the KwaZulu-Natal MEC for Transport and a passionate supporter of rural sports, MEC Sboniso Duma, as well as Coach Papi Zotwane online. And joined there with the MEC is soccer player Derek Spencer. Gentlemen, good afternoon to you all, and thank you so much for your time. Of course, it's a very exciting time that we're also having this conversation. And MEC, I'm going to start with you, given just what's happening here locally as well as internationally with the AFCON Cup. But let's talk about this then. What inspired the idea behind hosting this particular two-day rural football tournament during the school holidays especially?
Thank you so much for affording us this opportunity and according us, and we are glad and delighted that you are giving us this opportunity just to amplify what is currently happening in the soccer fraternity. Remember, historically, we used to have the school sport, which is something that is no longer in terms of coexistence with the current scenario of the new dispensation for different reasons. A talent like Derek Spencer would not have been seen if there was no proper scout. He wouldn't play for Kaizer Chiefs sometimes if the things were not done. So as Coach Papi Zotwane, who's currently coaching, so we thought that this facility was designed and built for the time of the World Cup. It was the facility that hosted Algeria during that particular time, FIFA accredited. But it was no longer utilized because there is no team that comes from this district called Uku District. We then started this process as the foundation. And our focal area is under 20 because we don't think they get enough time. You will remember that we used to produce, as the province of KwaZulu-Natal, many players were playing for big team. Kaizer Chiefs, we used to have 5 players for season at some point in time. So is Orlando Pirates and the Sundowns, but not anymore. So we are thinking of these initiatives as part of the academic processes that could assist. But we are holistic at the same time. We offer seminars talking about development, the issue of financial literacy, and so forth.
Yeah. MEC, I'm going to come back to you, but let me bring in then, Derek Spencer. Derek, just reiterating essentially what we heard yesterday by CAF President Patrice Motsepe, just talking about how important initiatives of development are, particularly in rural areas. As you give us your reaction in terms of this particular two-day tournament, just speak to us about that. How important is it to uncover that talent and to plow, of course, money into some of these development initiatives?
Yeah. Afternoon to you and the viewers. It's really very important. I can relate. I'm from a rural area called Ishawi. That's where I started my grassroots. And there's not much opportunities there. So it's important to have these initiatives where you bring people to these areas to come and scout for the players. And there's a lot of passion, and I'm really inspired to be part of this initiative. There's some quality players. I think they can come out of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And Coach, in terms of the contribution of tournaments like these, I mean, how does this tournament contribute, do you think, to youth development beyond just a football skills?
Yeah. Thank you for inviting us. I think it plays a huge role because personally, as Richard's day coach, it's very, very difficult for us because of the schedule that we have in the league that we get time to scout. But the Duma Foundation has given us an opportunity as coaches, because it's not only me, there are other coaches who are here from different teams. So it gives us an opportunity to look at players. And also it gives an opportunity for coaches who are coaching these players, because there were seminars that were conducted by Coach Mangoba and Coach Negas. So it gives us an opportunity to look at players. As teams, we believe in development, and this is the platform for players and for us coaches to look at players.
And while I still have you on, Coach, in your view, how can sports play a role in not only just building, skills, but building discipline, building teamwork, and of course, leadership, just among young people particularly?
Yes, sports doesn't only relate in the field. Yeah. It goes with human values, responsibilities, and it does that because if you can look, it goes to team sports because you need to respect your teammates, you need to be disciplined because games are coming thick and fast. So you have to rest. It goes with nutrition again. There's a lot of things. And again, it brings good human beings here because when you look at the leaders that are here, they are people of the society. So it teaches players to respect and obviously to have ambitions to be one day the soccer of South Africa. So it gives many opportunities for youngsters to grow as good human beings.
MEC, are there plans to expand this particular tournament or even roll out, you know, similar initiatives across other parts of KwaZulu-Natal, just given the sheer need for initiatives like these? And a second point to that, will you then also be involving the likes of your private sector, other stakeholders perhaps, to also, bring in that particular resources from their end?
I'm sure I'd be delighted to hear with the viewers at home that in June we'll be also hosting the coaching facilities, and this time it will be embraced almost the entire province of KwaZulu-Natal, because another factor is that the issue of development. You can't impart information these days without being scientific proven and following the proper technique in the process. So that is why we must build our coaches in the introduction phase of KFD in particular, so that they understand the cognitive mind, the background, because not all the team will afford that process because it's become very expensive, but we are going to do it. Yes, private sector is already willing. Just right now, you'll be surprised that even the bank were also giving us decision on the issue of financial literacy. And other sectors are also contributing with refreshments in particular. So it means it is going to grow with the network that qualitative we have created, and from now onwards, we do want to offer the process that if KwaZulu-Natal is among those well-designed, well-developed, but sport development, it's something that we must better because it does contribute to tourism, contributes to economy in terms of the GDP. These days, the concept of sport tourism is very strong in an area where we have 600-kilometer coastline, where we have beautiful mountains, even the safari, so it becomes easier. So we do want to ensure that we also attract more investment when it comes to this, because soccer these days is a global thing, and it pays so much. There's a new market of Middle East, for instance. Unkota, not so long ago, played for Orlando Pirates. These days, per week, is earning almost 1.2 million. It means that if you can nurture and groom more talent, a lot will happen, and we are glad that the legends are supporting us through these initiatives. We are so humbled that they are also participating in this journey along with us.
Yeah. Derek, leading up to AFCON, our teams across the provinces have been just tracking some of the players and, you know, just talking about where they come from in terms of grassroots. What are some of the messages that you would like to leave with young players who are taking part in this tournament that you are currently, embarking on, but also dreaming about playing professional football one day?
I think it's the most important thing is to dream, and it all starts here in grassroots. Whether you're from a small town, rural area, it doesn't matter. It's just that passion that you need, the passion, hard work, really, and perseverance. You can go a long way. I'm from Mishawi, small town, ended up playing for Chiefs. I never dreamt of it growing up, but it happened because of hard work and dedication to the sport. You get a lot of bad friends, wrong things that we grew up doing, but we must just try and avoid that and focus on whatever you want, whether it's football or anything else in life in general.
I think we'll end it on that beautiful note. Thank you so much, gentlemen, to you both. And, of course, Coach Papi Zotwana, who was joining us online. That is, of course, the MEC for Transport, as well as a passionate supporter of rural sports himself, MEC Sboniso Duma, as well as soccer player Derek Spencer there for us. All right,
Yes, there was a brief rundown of the scene south of the border over in South Africa. And as I was saying, that leads us into the success, rather the existence and the success of the Disky Challenge, which is what we'll get into now. And it's probably, the Disky Challenge, honestly, is probably one of South Africa's, not South Africa, one of Africa's biggest, biggest underreported, sporting success stories. And the Disky Challenge is the, for those that don't know, is the official reserve league of the PSL. It was launched in 2024, and it is the continent's first fully structured club integrated under 23 competition, which runs parallel to the senior league. And the only reason I want to discuss it is because the Disky Challenge, you know, the youth tournaments that we talked about today, like the SKW tournament, the one we just heard now from KwaZulu-Natal, it is in these tournaments where talent gets discovered so that you can be part of a, whether it's a PSL team or it's Disky Challenge team. It's through tournaments like this, that and obviously school tournaments, school matches and things of that nature. And interestingly enough, about the Disky Challenge is that it was never designed to be just a tournament. It was from the beginning. It was conceived as a multi-dimensional corporate social investment program, not a sponsorship. Right, and that's something we talk about here a lot on the Eagle Sports Zone. Is one, yes, the need for sponsorships, but also the need to involve corporate Namibia in ways where it's not just a sponsorship, right? Because what these companies like to do is, and rightfully so, of course, if you're giving money, you want publicity for giving money to a particular cause. But really, the truth of the matter is, when you see Company A, for example, sponsor a youth football team, it's mostly seen as a corporate social responsibility thing. More so seen as a donation, and more so seen just as a, truthfully speaking, just as a way to improve the image and improve the likeness of a particular brand. Also, when people think, oh, so and so company, they always support Namibian football because they sponsor a particular academy, for example. And speaking of that, before I continue about the Disky Challenge, something that came to mind this weekend, if not the most impactful or successful sports sponsorship, sports collaboration, sports deals in Namibia was SIMOT and SKW. You know, for a very long time, I didn't even know exactly what SIMOT was, but I knew the logo because of SKW. They had those that are a little, you know, older will remember the iconic orange kits that they played in with the big SIMOT logo in the middle. For a very long time, those two brands were synonymous. And like I said, I know I'm not the only one that I thought, you know, SIMOT SKW was just what the name of SKW was. It took me a long time to understand that it was a sponsorship. So it will be interesting to find out what other collaborations of that nature have had such an impact in the Namibian sporting world. Now I can think of, for example, F&B Classic Clash. That's an iconic sort of sporting corporate branding name. We've heard people call in about a Coca-Cola tournament, apparently, that used to take place for some years. I wasn't around for that, so I can't speak much on that. You know, Nedbank and their various cycling. Obviously, Nedbank Desert Dash. But other than that, I don't know if I can remember any other long-standing, really, collaborations or agreements between companies and Namibian sports organization like I can remember the Simot and SKW one. No, it would actually be interesting to hear from Simot. Why did that partnership end? Because it was, at least from my perspective, uber successful. But that was also when, you know, SKW was at its height. They were in the Premier League, you know, things of that nature. Obviously, they're not in the Premier League anymore. Haven't been for quite some time. Doesn't look like they'll be back anytime soon, but still. A great collaboration. But now back to the Disky Challenge. The Disky Challenge exists to close the gap between academy football and professional senior football. And that gap in Namibia is so, so big. Because if you are, you know, you're playing at AC, you're 16 years old, you're playing at Ramblers, you're 17 years old, you're playing at SKW, you're playing at SFC, you're playing at Windhoek City, all these different clubs. It's excellent that they exist. But that next step from academy to professional is, that pathway is lacking in Namibia, not just in football, across many sports. Rugby is a great example of that. We just lost another Namibian to the Springboks earlier this week, right? And the reason we lost him is because the Springboks are able to offer him something that simply no one in Namibia would have been able to offer him. I'm seeing clubs now, like I saw African Stars started an academy, so hopefully that will help close the gap. It would be nice to see a few players from the academy in the senior team in the next, let's say, 2-3 years to make that pathway. The one federation that I know has a clear, you know, pathway from developmental to the senior / pro side is cricket. Is Cricket Namibia. You know, on the footballing side of things, you have things like your newspaper cup, things like what's the academy called? CBS. You know, they kind of help close the gap between academy and professional, but there still isn't, you know, that concrete, tangible pathway to say, if you are a young Namibian footballer and you are at the ages of 16, 17, 18, maybe you're not ready for the top flight, but you're ready for the level after youth football. Between there's no gap. There's no take up of players. You know, most of these players, they end up playing in your first division, your second division, but often that level even for them is, if the player is good, even that level, in my opinion, is often not to the standard where it needs to be to further develop said player. So there are four key objectives of the Disky Challenge, and that is one that we just discussed, to a structured pathway to professional football. Over 340 players have been promoted to the PSL since the Disky Challenge inception. So imagine if Namibia had something similar to the Disky Challenge, where we could track how many players are going to make it to the top league, whether that's in football, whether that's in rugby. And then second is life skills and leadership. They have mandatory off-field training via scholarships, career conferences, and workshops. This is something also that our sporting ecosystem definitely needs. And third is broadcasting internships. Very important. They provide a hands-on production experience, whether it's via the camera, via commentary, via live matches. And again, this goes back to our conversation of last week. This is why things like broadcast rights need to exist, so that there can be money to pay interns, to pay people that want to learn the broadcasting game. You know, it's obvious that not everyone on a football team is going to make football itself their direct career. But what they can do is make football broadcasting their career. They can make football commentary their career. They can make football photography their career. But in Namibia, we don't have that because, you know, those roles don't particularly pay anything exciting or anything that, you know, you want to wake up in the morning for. And fourth, the fourth objective of the Disky Challenge is community TV access. And one key element to this, like I was talking about, is more than just sponsorship or corporate social responsibility. For things like this, it needs to be an investment. And MultiChoice has invested over 450 million since the inception of the Disky Challenge in 2014. So that works up to around 50 million per season, which covers travel, broadcast, infrastructure, and the five integrated components, which are football competition, life skills, internships, coach training, and then number five, free community rights. And then this Disky Challenge paid off on a national level, because in the under 20 African Cup of Nations, which was last year, South Africa won it for the very first time, and 18 of the players participated in the Disky Challenge. 18 of the players that were in South Africa's under 20 team were players from the Disky Challenge. And across all levels, the Disky Challenge has produced 260 national representatives. That's across all age groups. And 23 of 46 under-17/under-20 national team players came from the Disky Challenge. Then in the 2024-2025 season alone, 19 players were promoted to senior PSL teams. Now the question comes, can we replicate this model across the continent? Let's not even say across the continent. Let's stick to SADC itself. Can we replicate this model across SADC, across Region 5? No, we just had the Region 5 youth teams not too long ago. Can the Disky Challenge happen in Namibia? Why or why not? If you'd like to chime in, 0832888401. I see I have someone on the door right now. Do call back. Maybe your phone switched off, maybe your airtime ran out, but do call back at 0832888401. Give us your thoughts on this. And in Zimbabwe, they kind of have something similar, where 8 elite football academies launched what is called the Pro Bora League. This was launched late last year. It's a under 21 competition modeled exactly after the Disky Challenge. And in the league's founding statement, it reads as follows. Top leagues around the world recognize this developmental gap and have created structured platforms like the Premier League 2 in the English Premier League and the Disky Challenge in South Africa. So, you know, we already have the blueprint. The blueprint exists. And the blueprint requires a long-term title sponsor, of course, a professional league structure, broadcast integration, and an approach that takes into account the entire ecosystem. So with that said, as I just mentioned, the Premier League 2, we're gonna listen to a piece about the Bournemouth Youth Academy, Bournemouth English Premier League side, I believe on the south coast of England. They, of course, have an academy structure, and they were gracious enough to to produce this piece of content about what it is that we're talking about today. So this is going to give you some insight into what life is like in one of the top academies in the world. And I'll catch you on the other side of this.
Behind every Premier League club lies an academy, a relentless machine built to develop the next generation of footballers. Each week, hundreds of young people will train here on the South Coast, all with the common goal of a career in the professional game. For the first time ever, we take you inside the beating heart of AFC Bournemouth's academy, following the highs, the heartbreaks, and the sacrifices it takes to succeed. These are the pathways being built, with the aim to produce the next breakthrough name. Always advancing, never retreating. Welcome inside the AFC Bournemouth Academy.
Played, Archie. Played, Ben. Nice, Kevin. Good boy.
Academies are graded by categories. So there's category 1, 2, 3 and 4. Category 1 clubs are tends to be Premier League clubs, and category 2 clubs, and it follows down like that. Cat 2, you need some requirements like the dome and certain level of facility. So our facility now allowed us to make that jump. And then you play a different level of club, the clubs who put in the same investment as what we've done. And then if you want to make the jump to Cat 1, there's obviously certain levels of staffing, facilities, you access different types of games programs, so you reach that final stage of category 1.
We want to get to a stage where we're constantly producing players for the first team from the academy. That's always been our ambition, and just this season I think we've painted a really positive picture in having those younger players around the first team, having opportunities, minutes at first team level to provide the platform and pathway for younger players to get close to the first team.
I think the academy is a fundamental part of our club, I would say of every club. They give us the assurance that we have the help in trainings, the assurance of in case of need, like we've seen this season, no? That we can count on them and use them. And I'm always grateful when they help us, yes.
You've got 140 names on your board and you want them all to play for FC Bournemouth. Now we know that not all of them are going to. We recently changed our context and reset our vision to be produce our first team captain. Now we've gone very big with our vision, but for us, if the club are going to put money into us as an academy, if we're going to go move into this building and move towards Cat 1, then we want to produce the most important player for the first team.
Yellows, what we're looking to do just to begin with is take those pictures around Brentford's press. So again, Lowy's acting as a Brentford goalkeeper, they've got the green back four in, single pivot in here, 2 8s, and Kelvin's their left-sided player, but he starts very, very narrow. It's man for man. Now we can start thinking about skipping the press. If they start jumping one of the midfield players up, you can free yourself up as well, Lee. So all of a sudden, if Stucky starts drawing him underneath the ball and Leland, you start roaming in, doesn't have to be straight. You might come off on an angle.
My role is the under 15, 16 lead coach. So I oversee both age groups. This year we are a mixed age group cell, and I oversee all the players and the staff within that. It's a tricky year to navigate, not just on the grass, but for the boys themselves as young people. They have a really important GCSE year in education, so that's a big factor. On top of trying to earn a scholarship at a Premier League club, so there's definitely two major stresses there. The boys that are in our age group, they're 14, 15-year-old young kids that have full-time education, and for some who travel quite a long distance, some can travel over, an hour away. So it's really important they find that balance. We work extremely hard, not just on the football side, but from an emotional well-being, making sure the boys are looked after. We need the boys and want the boys to be at their optimum come Saturday. So yeah, it's really important we manage their works accordingly.
I think especially for this year, doing GCSEs, it's a lot harder. I think at the weekends, on the Sundays and the days off, you've got to really, for me personally, you've got to get your head down and start working. Because, you know, it's not long until we're going to be doing my exams, so, yeah.
Well, there's obviously some key principles and some pillars that we follow, which I think is important at any football club. So there's definitely a vision of how the club would like to play and where they want to go with that. So we're definitely guided by that. Yeah, everyone is one unit, which is really nice, and I think the players benefit from that.
It's qualifiers day for the under-16s, a chance to earn the right to face the top academies in the country. A national competition where the Cherries have only reached the tournament proper twice in their history.
You only qualify if you're a Premier League team. So we get the opportunity when the first team's in the Premier League. But because we're Cat 2, we often have to qualify. So really great exposure. Looking forward to what this year will give.
I mean, it's the biggest tournament. I went last year when I was a year below. And it's just like an amazing experience. All the best teams in the country together. And, you know, as Bournemouth, we're sort of seen as the underdogs. They're a smaller type of club. But I think it's a great experience and a great opportunity to get sort of your name out there and compare yourself to others in terms of the level.
Boys, how are you feeling?
Excited.
Use that emotion as positive energy, boys. I'm loving the warm-up. I feel like we're in a good place emotionally.
It's a very good weekend for us, actually a very good week, because we prepared those games very professional. And I think the players took information on board really well during the week. And that facilitates our task when it comes to the weekend, because the players have taken the information on board. They knew what the game plans were going to be. And then on the day, we just needed to make sure, okay, this is what's happening, or this is what we expect to happen. It's happening.
We've got Brentford and Ipswich in a three-teamer qualifier from the Premier League. We top two go through. So we play each other once on a day. Top two go through. The third place, unfortunately, doesn't get through on a day. Any opportunity the boys get to qualify for this sort of tournament is a great thing for them. The boys just relish the opportunity to get there.
Bournemouth start well against the Bees. But with 20-minute halves, the first goal could be make or break.
Now is the moment that you have to go out there, you have to go and give your best, you have to go and enjoy your game, you have to shine. So let's make sure all that information that you have been preparing for, now it comes out on the game and you put all the hard work in.
Play with purpose and intent though. Play with intent. Well done, massive well done. We've shown the grit, we showed resilience in those final moments, even when we're speaking around what we can learn, we've still showed we got across the line.
It's natural, you boys have not been in the situation before, but you're good players and you showed first half you can control a game of football. Okay, the result may affect your decision making slightly in moments, but actually when we've got time to control the ball and show our quality, continue to do so, because that's how you'll make chances and that's how you go get two and three goals. So believe in yourselves, you've come through that test, that's fantastic, you've got another game coming later on. You can take all that learning into this afternoon's fixture.
The first goal was going to be massively important, and it was arguably going to decide the game, and it kind of worked out that way.
Obviously, in terms of the context of the intention of the objective, we all know what's happened, right? Yeah. How now then do we make this next game like a learning experience or valuable? That's the challenge now. We want to finish top of the group. Can we now go and win this little mini group? Everyone happy with that? Go show me then. Let's go. Come on. The application, commitment throughout the whole of this week in terms of the preparation, I thought it's been really, really good. And you could just see the togetherness within the group. I think it's really strong.
And trust me, boys, throughout this season and beyond, when you go into hopefully first team football or whatever your future lies, togetherness and what you look like in difficult moments, that's just the test of a character. And I'll end it on this note. My main feeling is like pride, at how proud of you boys I am today, and we are of you. You know, top lads, and you've got the outcome that you deserve. So massive, massive well done. Big plaudits all round. Well done. Boys.
Red Bull. Come on, stick out it, Blues. Come on.
My journey at this football club started in 2002 when I signed as a young player. I was 19 years of age and I had 5 seasons here over 2 spells. And then I rejoined the academy in 2015 and did 2 years with the under 12s, 5.5 years then managing the under 18s before doing the last 2 years with under 21s. So in my 10th season now in the academy as a coach.
But think about what I spoke about Tuesday after the Southampton game. What was that big message when I spoke about the club and the badge? Never give up. Yeah, I know it's a slogan as such, but it is. So if you pull together and if you look around, look at how many people we've got here today. Obviously, I know I've been here a long time, but what the club represents or what it means is that is setbacks and coming back again. Setback and coming back again. And you showed it again today.
I mean, personally, my day, Tom Prodomo, my assistant and I, we're sat at the desk ready to plan at 6:30 every morning. So whether that's going through ideas, rewatching clips back, planning training, we like that quiet time to discuss all these things. So that'll be a normal weekday. And then we drive across to Camford from the stadium where our office is based at the moment, train the players. So that would be a general working day, and then we leave around sort of 5 o'clock-ish. So that's a general working day. So that's a Monday. Often our games are on Tuesdays, especially our home games. So we're either playing at our stadium or at Wimborne. Most of our games are at Wimborne. So again, in the stadium morning, drive across to Wimborne for the game. Yeah, a lot of time and effort goes into it. But for me, within coaching, management and football in general, you know, you need to put everything into every action. I think it's the only way you've got any chance of being successful in such a competitive industry.
Once we do the kickoff, we then look to go on our press. So our press is pretty standard with the goal kick. So Ashley, I've got a diagonal line going back towards here, and there's a green that says AC there.
The first team has to be the priority of any club. It's what all our younger players aspire towards. It's what the fans come and see. It's what fills the stadium. And I think, you know, there's a long history now of our journey from League Two to the Premier League of pushing boundaries. And even more recently, you know, under the Gaffer, records points total. So I think the perception of Bournemouth internally has changed. I think the perception externally is certainly starting to change. And that's really exciting for everyone because with increased expectation, then increased standards have to follow, increased accountability. And those are certainly really healthy things in driving the academy forwards to follow the progress that's been made at first.
Good. Kevin, on the pass, go. Yes, Finn. Good. Good. Go. Let's go, Finn. Four. Brilliant moto. Well done, Ben. Ben, well done.
Love that. If you can carry, great. If he's already in, he's on side, give it him.
The next step for our players is first team football under 21. So whether that's out on loan, whether that's in our first team, or unfortunately players leave the club and you're getting them ready for their next step. My big focus day to day is making sure our players are ready for their first step in first team football. So yeah, that they're all big challenges. And there's often a lot of moving parts in under 21 football. So there's a lot of day-to-day decisions. And you have to be very flexible with your decision-making as well.
Good, let's go, Kel. Yes, Green's your turn. Let's get excited to press.
Good evening all and welcome to the start of a new Chelsea week. And it begins with the under-21s, who are always a great watch. Tonight, they're in cup action. on the south coast. They've come to Wimborne in Dorset for game two of this season's Premier League Cup. It has already begun well for both of these clubs, actually. Bournemouth, the hosts here, won narrowly on opening night. So much attacking intent, lots of goals, so you can expect more here. So, who, if anyone, can go to 6 points out of six? Excellent from Rakitic, well taken by Olise. Super control, desperate effort at a cynical foul. Olise's cross. Oh, Harvey Vale, it's a great chance, it's in! Williams with the latest corner. And there's Harold William, twice over, somehow. There's a force field around that Chelsea goal there.
Yes, that's one. No foul. Go on. Go on. Go on. Yes, Lou. Come on, guys.
Well won by Johnny Stuttle up top. See much of him for Bournemouth. Motto looks a threat. That's a good cross hanging up there. Chance certainly on target till Caden Wilson diverted it. It's Carlos Gregory. That'll be that. Look at the watch and a blow of the whistle and a half-time lead for Chelsea in this second game of the Premier League Cup group. Bournemouth have had their threats.
Just that composure on the transitions and then go forward, or if not, we sustain and then we go. Just keep getting on the ball. Very, like the variety in our play, that's what makes us a great team, a difficult team to play against. Just because we go long a little bit more in the build, when we do have that time to get composure, then we can start playing and doing our final third. Getting the players on the ball that can do their thing.
What's the feeling?
I think what we've prepared for.
Yeah.
We've done it well. We've had many chances and we've had chances up for going on. Excellent second balls and, you know, we've worked up the pitch quite quickly. So.
We made it that ugly game that we wanted it to be. It's just then at times the balance that I was working about, I wanted to make it hit up on it and do our thing, get the players on the ball to do their things.
We asked you to be competitive, we've been ultra competitive. Ultra competitive. Tackles, second balls, first balls. But boys, look how much positive stuff that we've done. So the press, exactly as we looked at, yeah, everyone's aggressive. There's a lot. Look at Lou Brown around on the goalkeeper, Harold following in. Yeah, tight, making it uncomfortable. We break. Can we find a forward pass early? And we're unlucky. We've been unlucky with nine passes a few times that we looked at in the week. Don't lose the physicality and the mentality that's really got us in this game and really got us in a big chance of getting something from this game. So don't lose those core basics and fundamentals, boys. Because again, I'm loving watching it. I'm loving watching the commitment. I'm loving watching you playing a proper game. I'm loving watching you play in front of a decent crowd because that's what you deserve. Have a minute, guys, and be ready. Come on, come on. It's here for us. Come on, come on, come on. Come on, stop. Keep going.
Morgan's there, and so's Brody Hughes for a rare goal. Right place, right time. That has been a real feature tonight. The Blues have a cushion. It's 2-0. Here's a chance. We've been waiting for one of them all night. There's Johnny Stuttle.
Well played.
Oh, mistake from Harris. Here's Washington. No, but it's definitely a penalty, surely. Look that way. Nicely done, David Washington. Off the bench and onto the score sheet. Bournemouth 0, Chelsea 3. Tideman. Motto. Good cross. Johnny Stuttle has his goal. It's a good header, that. Come on, Morgan! Required here, twice over. Well played. They've had about 30 seconds to get another Bournemouth, but we're more concerned about the other end here because it's Tyrick George and it's Washington. Out the way, McNeely. 4-1. Final score in Dorset. Bournemouth 1, Chelsea 4.
Really well played. Well done. Well played. We'll see you again. All right, well played.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, they're too quiet at the moment. What you're showing is there's nothing to fear when you're on a football pitch. Individually or collectively, there's nothing to fear. You compete with both of them. But in terms of how you get to that next level, it then comes down to the details of errors, and it comes down to capitalising on the moments that you got. So if you go away from here with anything, know that you can compete. Know that you can be better than opposition that on paper should be this, should be that. But then also know that the work you're now doing is to convert those good performances, those pats on the back, into ruthless wins. Into games where you dominate the big moments. Okay? But so much of that to be proud of, definitely.
That was a really, really positive performance. There's no way they had it on their terms. It was uncomfortable. We created chances. Thinking we also had fine lines. Yeah, at no point did I see a team that went flat. Yeah, I thought it was good energy. It was good voice. Okay, but that is a good night for everyone. Let's make sure we have another good, another even better night on Thursday night. Okay? Thank you.
Next time.
You can see his potential as a coach.
It's the biggest game of the season for the lad.
And the referee blows the full-time whistle.
Of the players who I've worked with who've made the top level, Marcus Rashford did not go and do one-to-one coaching elsewhere.
Neil Harris has been a senior coach at Manchester United for over 20 years, working with the likes of Marcus Rashford, Kobbie Mainoo, Scott McTominay, Anthony Elanga, and many, many more.
If a parent is, you know, a bit too vocal about other people's children or their own child, can that ruin a child's opportunity?
I wouldn't say it necessarily ruins it, but it becomes exhausting.
There are conversations within academies where the coaches are saying, this parent's a nightmare.
That's an important message for parents
to
hear.
Yeah, no, that's why I wanted to come back to it.
So we can be conscious of how we conduct ourselves on the sideline. The parents want to know, so you're saying, like Michael Lee say, at 9 years old, you're like, whoa, that's when you spot this kid has a chance of making it, but also being the best in the world.
If you were to watch an under-9 match and you see Michael, and somebody's like, right, bet on who's going to be a Ballon d'Or winner out of that. Seriously. You would bet on him. Welcome to the relaunch of Project Footballer. Good news and bad news, depending on what side of the fence you sit, but we're going to be continuing without Sean. Luckily, we have an incredible guest in Neil Harris. And then today we'll also be with Jenny Boateng, helping us co-host as well.
So I want to introduce myself. Some of you might recognise my voice. I was lucky enough to be a guest on Project Footballer not so long ago. But I came with my son, who is a Premier League Academy Young Writer of the Year, and he's written a book, Back in Time, a football book on racism. And so I was here with him talking about the mindset you need to have to make it into academy football. And Sean said he liked what he heard and he has invited me to co-host. So I'm here to represent the parents. And hopefully we're going to get to the nitty gritty of what parents really want to know when it comes about, you know, how do you build your project footballer? So I'm really looking forward to this episode. And I just want to say my sons and my husband are Man United fans. So they are really excited that I'm meeting you, especially my husband, who has been a Man United fan for as long as you've been there. So he's helped me prep, be like, ask this question. But to kick us off, the first question I have for you, Neil, is you've seen hundreds of talented players go through the United Academy system. And what's the first thing you notice when you say you think this child or this player has a real chance of making it? What is that first thing you see?
Obviously, it changes with regards to, you know, as they go through the age ladder and through the academy, through the phases. But the thing that I would say is that always looking for a, you know, super strength or an outstanding quality. Do they have, obviously, I'll say a lot of this about the boys. I've worked in a boys' academy. You know, do they have an outstanding quality? Do they have something that maybe separates them differently?
Get ready to embrace a world of possibilities at the University of Namibia with a community of ambitious students, researchers and innovators. Shape your future with a wide range of programs in agriculture, engineering, natural sciences, commerce and management, law, education, human sciences, health sciences or veterinary medicine. Apply online at unam.edu.na. UNAM, open your mind.
Watch a game if it's within their own training group, whether they're playing against an opposition. So, you know, we used to always, when we went on the tour, we might be playing a Barcelona, Real Madrid, an Ajax, Inter Milan. But we always wanted to have the best player. You know, did we have the best player on the pitch? So I think for me, when I'm looking, so say if a trialist came in or if I had a new group of that would come up to me at say, under 13, I'd always be looking to see, you know, do they have an outstanding quality that's different to somebody else? You know, are they the best defender? Are they the best at 1v1 defending? Are they best at scoring goals? Are they best at linking, combining? Are they the most physical at the moment? But, you know, do they show, you know, good repetition of actions? Are they a good listener? Do they retain information? I think one of the things I really believe in is that the players that have gone on to play at certain levels and the highest level, always were very good at retaining information. So either seeking it or being able to receive it and taking that on board. We had a conversation with many talented players who maybe just weren't able to retain that information. So therefore, the information that coaches were affording to them, or maybe via parents and via other parts of the MDT team, it just didn't click for them. And maybe that was a little bit of the issue with regards to getting to the highest level. So I'd say a lot of the players there, an outstanding quality that separates them from others, and maybe that retention of information, really.
Can we go deeper, though? So as a parent, I'm thinking, okay, identifying a super strength. All of the parents, we think our child has a super strength. Are some super strengths more important than others? Like, which is more important? Is it a super strength of football IQ, or is it the physical aspects of the game, or is it the technical aspects of the game? So each child, especially in elite clubs, will have a strength. But which one would you say is the most important to having a real chance?
For me, I would always look at the technical aspects of it. And obviously, certainly the younger ages. But for me, anything. You watch the top level game. You know, we're filming this. Last night was the Super Cup, and managed to catch a little bit of the game. You know, the best bits that happened in that game were down to somebody's technical, whether they were able to bring down a ball, you know, the ball was being played 60 yards and they brought it down, you know, on the run, whether they've taken it off the chest, whether they've been able to combine, you know, with a 1-2 pass. That's technical work that's then obviously gone into a skill. And I'm a big believer, I've said this a few times now, for me, a skill is a technique done under pressure. So we need to really continue to work on that technique work. And then the skill element is then, you know, the pressured environment, doing it under pressure. So the skill is the technique done under pressure, which then comes into the footballing IQ. Because again, you know, I've seen lots of people being able to strike a ball as good as first team players, but then are they able to make those decisions at the right level as they progress through an academy or any form of sport to then add that, you know, footballing IQ, as you put it there, this decision making thing. So for me, I wouldn't look at the physical elements as much. Of course, the game is faster than ever, more physical than ever. But, you know, we've got to make sure that we don't fall into a trap of just looking at the early developers, which I do think, sadly, is creeping into academy football. We need to make sure that we are looking at these players who can find a way, and at this moment in time are, you know, their growth and maturation is, you know, is obviously a little bit behind others, and that's why, you know, I'm a massive believer in the biobanding. Some clubs tend to do it for 1 week of the season. That's not enough. If you really believe in it, you know, we've got to make sure we find a pathway for all players. And at the same time, you can't help if you're more physical than other players at your age, the way you've developed, and you're an early developer. But then make sure that we aren't pushing that early developer purely on his physical attributes. So I've seen it happen again, where maybe an MDT team or somebody has said, "Oh, the size of him, he needs to be playing up." we need to be pushing him up. Mm. And I'm like, no, but if you look at all four corners with Tech and Tack being one, will he socially be able to deal with going up with an older group? Don't know. We'll have a look. Psychologically, will he be able to deal with it? Physically, he may look like he'd be able to deal with it, but actually when it comes to it, that physical growth is still different because his actual age is still, his biological age is still this.
Mm.
So we've got to be careful also with early developers as well, because I think what I see a lot is that early developers get pushed up a lot and all of a sudden you see these big boys at 12 playing for 14s, 15s playing for 16s, 18s playing, 17-year-old playing in 21s football. And what for me is they miss a real opportunity to be those bigger players, but maybe actually going and I think we spoke about it. But on the flip side, I think we with Michael Owen and stuff, and we were fortunate to speak to Paul Merson last night, and we're talking about players always want to play up all the time and things like that. And I think it was yourself or Paul, I can't remember now. Paul said, I spoke to Michael Owen the other day, and he went, they always wanted to push me up, but I wanted to stay my own age and score 10, 12 goals a game because I knew that was going to make me be a better finisher rather than have one, two chances a game playing up. Now, I know if you're a bigger physical player, players want... coaches and an MDT team want to stretch you, but we've just got to make sure that we know the person, not just the player. And that's a massive philosophy for me. We've got to understand the person before we just look at the player and say, oh, he's a big physical boy, he can go and play up.
And then with that as well, I think understanding as a parent and as a coach the player's strength and their super strength, because there's so many players I've come across and they are trying to be a player that isn't their super strength. They're very intelligent. You watch them play a game, they can pick spaces, they can find holes, they can play off one and two touch so well. But then they want to be the dribbler and they want to be the centre forward, and then that's the sexy thing to be. So they're forgetting their super strength and they're going to try and be a player that they're not. And then all of a sudden, you're trying to develop and almost force that part of your game, when if you start concentrating on your super strength and then you get to a stage where you're untouchable at that super strength. But knowing what that is and not just trying to be what's sexy.
But the challenge as a parent that I've seen, so my second son, he plays for Chelsea, and personally, I think he can do both. He can be that dribbler. He can be that one that can go through the whole team. But I think he's actually, if you speak to him, he's like, I'm a playmaker. He likes to do sweaties and he likes that. But then I find that at the younger age groups, that doesn't seem to be celebrated more. Where I see, because you want your team to do well and score goals in a smaller pitch, you do want the dribbler person just going to get the ball and shoot. But then you can sometimes, those children who do show a different, can play a different type of game, get overlooked at the early stages. And so I think that's where it'll be interesting to talk about how coaches and academies balance that, actually, where maybe on a smaller pitch, the dribbler is getting the limelight. But what about the child who they can do that, but then also they can't, but then their strength is one touch, two touch play and can create opportunities, but they're not getting opportunities.
That's got to come with the skill and experience of the coach. You know, we don't want one size fits all footballers. We've been through, fortunately, you know, listening to what Matt said there, my tenure at Manchester United, I went through probably three or four different cycles, not only at the club. I think we were quite good for a long period of time of knowing what long-term player development was and what type of players we were looking for. But I do think that I've seen sort of two, three cycles where it has changed. But the skill of the coach has got to know that there is a balance. We want balance. We don't want cookie cutter players all the time. And I do think at times, and I think Matt agrees from our conversation, we are seeing a lot of those players now. Everybody seems to want to play on the wings and be an inverted winger all the time because of social media and obviously the Premier League teams are doing it, and all around the world it's absolutely fine, because I remember when it was obviously you're on your normal side, etc. But we've got to make sure that, I think going back to Matt's point there, is that super strength, but also what I sort of call it really skill set specific. So actually, what do you need? What tools do you need to be technically proficient to be able to carry out the role that you want to do? Not a coach wants to do at a certain age. Yes, the older you get, there will be coach demands on you. But are you able to, if you are playing at the back in a back three in a 9v9 or something like that, are you capable of receiving the ball off your goalkeeper, being able to pass it back to him in one, being able to turn out and play forward to your winger, being able to have a good touch pass and break lines with your touch and drive in there and things. So that's where the skill of the coach has got to be. Well, okay, well, he's going to play in two or three positions at this young age.
Mm.
Does he have the skill set specific to be able to carry that out? Because I'm sick and tired of it, and Matt's had this so many times of me messaging it to him, is that, you know, hearing coaches say he can't do this and he can't do that, and then I'll say, well, have you done it with him? Have you practiced with him? Have they had exposures to do that before, during or after training? You know, at times we get caught up on what kids can't do and what players can't do, as opposed to going back to what Matt said there, you know, what can they do? Let's enhance that. Let's build on that. Let's make sure that, you know, if they're a right back, do they have the tools to be able to play to the maximum potential in that position? If they are asked to then go and play on the right hand side of midfield or in centre midfield, do they have the fundamentals to be able to go and play in any position at a young age? And those basics are scanning, passing, receiving, ball control, ball mastery, ball manipulation, and then, you know, you will see the natural dribblers, etc., who want to do that. So going back to your question, really, the skill of the coach has got to be to say, well, he isn't a dribbler there, but I tell you what, he didn't half see that pass then. He played around the corner or something like that. Let's reinforce that with that player. That was fantastic. And then also what I think is really, really important is then working on units then. So you work with that dribbler and you work with that passer, and then reinforce to the dribbler how important that person is who's just playing that ball, you know, where you're able to get that higher up the pitch because he's been able to turn and play in two touch and things like that. So
they appreciate each other's
100%.
So can you bring that to life? Like with some of the top players that you've coached, can you bring that to life? Who has been like that dribbler and who has been that like that passer? And yeah, where their super strengths are different, but they've both made it in your experience.
Yeah, so I think in terms of, so, example with Marcus Rashford, when he was a young player, when we were still at 9v9, so probably under 12, maybe under 11, and because I had him for a couple of seasons, so I can't remember which one it was. And he was struggling a little bit. He was playing on the right wing, and he was struggling a little bit with receiving the ball with the play behind him as such. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't able to work on his receiving skills, etc. So I put him as a right-hand side of a back three. At the time, a few people are like, he's not a defender, it's an attacking option. It's so we can get the ball off the goalkeeper and carry the ball up the pitch and look to combine and things like that. And that really, you know, for just half a season, he would dip in and out of the positions. But for half a season, that really helped him in terms of just actually having the play in front of him.
Yeah.
And we were sort of, we weren't missing a step because we knew we'd come onto that. And it's a long-term player development model. It should be. We're not looking for those players to do it here and now. We just wanted him to enjoy his football, get on the ball, be able to carry the ball, combine, overlap, get into forward areas, and actually probably be more attacking from the area where he was rather than sort of waiting for the ball.
I love that because sometimes as parents, you see the coach put, like my son's a striker, and you see them put him at the back, and I'm like, he cannot play at the back. You know, everyone would be like, why are they doing that?
But where the explanations have got to be really, really clear with parents, with and obviously guardians, or with the player. You know, it's that's the buy-in.
Yeah.
You know, that's the buy-in. I've mentioned this to Matt so many times. You know, for me, real learning takes place once a player knows that you care about them.
Yeah.
Well, how do you show that you care about them? Well, you talk to them. You know, I really want you to get better. You want to get better at this? Brilliant. Well, I think this will really, really help you. What do you think? Yeah, okay. Maybe show them a little bit of footage of a player similar. And then real learning takes place is once a parent knows that you care about their son. So, for example, I'm sure you've seen it yourself. If you see that a coach shows a genuine interest in your son and, you know, explains to you why we might be doing this thing, why he might not be going on this tour, why he might not be going to this tournament, but there's this one coming up and we think the reason why is this. Subconsciously, you then relax, which then means that the player relaxes because as kids growing up, we listen to our parents we like the same things our parents like and we dislike the same things that our parents dislike subconsciously. So that allows real learning to take place. So I think that's where the coach, you know, I hear some coaches or I've seen some coaches who keep parents at an arm's length, nonsense. You have to bring the parents along with the journey. You have to remind them that it is a long-term journey and things. But you set those boundaries early doors. But I think as long as you bring them along with it and explain it to them clearly as to why you're doing this, and then it is an individual program, and we're only at under 12s. This is going back to the analogy of, you know, of building the foundations of you know, baking the cake.
Yeah.
We're only at this stage. Some parents, some players might think that they're a little bit higher up, you know, and they're not far from the icing and the cherry on the top, and they've not even gone in the oven yet.
So stop, Matt, if I'm talking too much, but he's hit on a couple of things that I just want to go into a little bit more. I love the fact that you talk about Rashford having something to work on, because I think for us parents, we see the likes of Rashford and people making it, and we just think they probably had, they're always perfect. We think that in our minds that, yes, they're developing, but I'm sure they were always perfect. But for you to say that he had to work on this at under 12s, it gives us hope that if our child is not perfect at something, they can still progress, develop and make it. But then you also touch on, like, if your child doesn't get selected for this tour or this tournament, you know, an explanation should be given and it's okay. Well, let's talk about that. Because even in your under nines, under tens, your child doesn't get selected. I've been there myself. I put my hands up. My child wasn't selected. I'm like, excuse me, what are you trying to say about my child? So what professional players have not been picked for something, but they've still made it? So to just let parents relax a bit, that if at, they don't get picked for Premier League nationals at under 11s, their football career is not over. They can still...
Oh my gosh, 100%. I can't think of any particular examples, but, you know, go back to players playing down, you know, which is, again, we can come on to, because that whole playing down gives that stigma, but they're just potentially playing in there.
We call it playing across now is what they're saying.
Fantastic. They're playing across the foundation phase, or they're playing across the development phase, 100%. You know, so Jesse Lingard played across the ages, played down, as we called it, you know, for 2 or 3 years. Paul Scholes did. Danny Simpson did. You know, Jesse Lingard scored a winning goal in the FA Cup final, played in England in the World Cup and European Championships. Danny Simpson left Manchester United, won the Premier League trophy. So for me, it's all about the here and the now. But going back to your point about leaving people out.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone, and our time is now up, because coming in after me is the one and only, the Madam Matriarch, coming to do her weekly show of Elizabeth's World. She seems to have forgotten to put her phone on silent when entering the studio. But yeah, she will be. She will be joining you now this evening. Don't forget, tomorrow the Villager will be published. If you haven't subscribed already, send us a WhatsApp message at 081-200-4144. And I'll see you same time, same place next week, Sunday. I'll leave you in the hands of the Matriarch's favorite artist before she takes over. So we'll be back next week, Sunday.
Oh, Pablo, I'm a little bit. I did it like I should.